Order for Wednesday, January 30th, 2013. Let the record state there is a quorum present, although we won't be taking any action today. For the members, I think that we're going to have an interesting meeting here this afternoon. As you know, it does not say it specifically in the title of our committee name, but when the reorganization committee did put this committee together, we also have jurisdiction over the telecommunications in the state of Minnesota, which is an area of interest that I've had my entire time here in the Minnesota Senate. So I think it's a big deal. I think it's good for members to get a brief overview today of the governor's task force and some other folks. So we brought in some good speakers. I hope you'll find it informative. And feel free to try to get up to speed and ask as many questions as you need to, because it is a ever-changing industry. And so with that, I would like to invite William Hoffman with Connect Minnesota, the senior program manager, to the committee. And welcome, and thank you for being here today.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. It's a great pleasure to be here today to give you an overview of the Connect Minnesota program and what we're doing in Minnesota and some of the products and information that we're providing the state as well as stakeholders across Minnesota related to broadband access, adoption, and use. So just a little bit about the history of our program in Minnesota. Connect Minnesota, we're a state-based nonprofit, and we are a subsidiary of Connected Nation, which is a national 501c3 organization. Our first work in Minnesota began in 2008. Actually, Minnesota was a little bit ahead of the curve, and in 2008, the legislature established a grant program to map broadband availability across the state, realizing and recognizing that broadband was going to be an important part of economic development moving forward. And at that time, Connected Nation and Connect Minnesota was awarded that grant and produced the first broadband map for Minnesota. Subsequently, Connect Minnesota was named the state's designated entity for federal funding under NTIA's State Broadband Initiative Program that began in 2009. And funding for that program, and therefore what we're doing in Minnesota, is scheduled to last through December 2014. And importantly, all the information and data that we collect through our work with providers under this program is supplied to the FCC for inclusion in the National Broadband Map. So it's not just used here in Minnesota. It's being sent to the FCC, used to inform their national broadband map, which is then being used as the FCC implements reform related to the Connect America Fund and how dollars are being distributed as they move forward with that program. Our mission, quite simply, is threefold: to support economic development across the state by assessing broadband availability, adoption, and use. To educate and inform policymakers and stakeholders in Minnesota through our mapping research and analysis, and to partner with public and private and nonprofit stakeholders on efforts to expand broadband availability, adoption, and use. Our program has four primary components. First is data collection and mapping. We work with the broadband providers in Minnesota and the public to create, validate, and update both granular and interactive statewide maps to accurately depict broadband availability. And we update those maps every 6 months in conjunction with the filings we make to the federal government. We conduct survey and research, in-depth research, once a year on two issues, residential adoption and business adoption of broadband. And we can benchmark those results over the life of our program so we can see where progress is or is not being made. In terms of planning, we provide support to the Minnesota Department of Commerce and their Office of Broadband Development and the Minnesota Broadband Task Force through detailed analysis of all the data that we collect related to availability and adoption, as well as providing insight on broadband-related public policy developments both nationally and here in Minnesota. And then finally, looking at program development to establish partnerships with a wide variety of groups at the local and state levels to promote and launch programs that will impact broadband adoption and use, including digital literacy and computer ownership programs. Mapping is what we're largely known for, and a little bit about the maps that we do provide. All of you should have, by the way, received a map, hopefully you did, in the last week, that was of your unique Senate district and the broadband availability at the state statutory speed goal. If you didn't receive that, please let me know and I'll make sure you get that. But our maps are all available at our website, connectmn.org, and they're available in a wide variety of formats and views. We have a fully interactive map that's called My Connect View, and I'll talk a little bit about that in a second. And then we have downloadable maps in PDF formats at both the state and county levels. And these depict broadband availability at a wide variety of speed tiers. They illustrate the types of broadband that are available in the state and at county levels. So they're really a resource to see what's going on across the state. As I mentioned, the National Broadband Map, which is administered by the FCC and the NTIA, is located at broadbandmap.gov. And that utilizes the data collected and submitted by Connect Minnesota, reflecting what we've found. Importantly, for those that might check it, their data is about, and their map is about 6 months behind what you will see on our website for a variety of reasons having to do with Washington. Our maps, as I mentioned, are updated every 6 months, and they will be through December 2014. And the next update for these maps will be on our website, available in April of this year. And importantly, these maps aren't just based on the data that we collect through our work with providers. We undertake an ongoing and consistent process of validating the coverage information that we get from providers. And that includes through on-the-ground field validation of infrastructure. So if we're told by a provider that they've put a new antenna up at a certain location or a tower, our field staff can go and out across the state and check to make sure that that's there and valid. Survey research to spot check availability and speed. So our field staff will go out across the state and do random tests from the back of a truck, measuring speed for a wireless connection, for example, and also fixed connections. And then we also, importantly, encourage public input so that if a citizen in Minnesota looks at our map and sees our data showing that a certain type or a certain speed of broadband is available at their address or in their community, but in fact they're not getting that, that they can contact us and we will work with them and the provider to find out where the disconnect is and make any corrections to the map. But hopefully be able to put the two together and resolve any issues that are there. And the providers across the state have been great in working in partnership with us as well as communities and citizens across Minnesota to address any concerns or inconsistencies. As I mentioned, we have the interactive map. I would encourage you or your staff to take a look at it and play around with it. We didn't have time today. Called My Connect View. It's on our website. It really has quite an array of features unique to Connect Minnesota and the state of Minnesota, therefore, related to individual addresses and what we can find at a specific community. So any of you could plug in your address and see a list of all the types of broadband that are available, the providers that are available at that address, the speeds that are available at that address, and links that take any citizen to all the providers' websites to see if there are any special offers. A number of providers across Minnesota offer discounts and training programs, and we always are looking to enhance that. As I mentioned, we also encourage citizens to feedback to us so that if there are any discrepancies, we can take care of that. And I did want to point out that we work with the Office of Broadband Development and most notably Diane Wells from that office to collect data on the state's community anchor institutions. That's one of the goals of the FCC and the NTIA, is to get a picture of nationally of what states' community anchor institutions, which would include public safety facilities, universities, libraries, schools, et cetera, what type of broadband connections they have, where there might be gaps and lagging areas. Because that's important, obviously. There was just a story yesterday in Wall Street Journal, I don't know if you saw, that highlighted how students in certain communities that don't have access to quality high-speed broadband are going to McDonald's or Starbucks to do homework because that's where they're able to get that speed. So that research is an important component of our work. So I just wanted to show a couple examples of the static maps that we produce. Again, these are available on our website. On the left-hand side, you'll see just an example of the types of criteria and different maps that we have at different speed tiers, different platforms, et cetera, underserved areas as well. This map in particular, it's hard to see, obviously, on the screen, but it looks at, on a county basis, the percentage of availability at our state statutory speed goal of 10 megabit download speed and what we measure as 6 megabit upload speed. And so you can see the array of percentages of availability across the counties of Minnesota.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is this an okay time for a question on this particular
sure
issue?
Is. Yep,
I think so. I'm just so glad you're here today. I did look at the information that you sent me, and I specifically looked at this map. And being a senator from Olmsted County, and I see that we're under 20%, and I just need to ask you what that measures, because I'm so shocked. We have such a strong IT center, health tech center, higher ed technology in my district, that I'm just surprised. So what does this mean exactly?
Mr. Hoffman.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Senator Nelson. This map and this data measures households that have availability, broadband availability at the state statutory speed goal of 10 megabits download speed by, we measure at 6 megabits. The state statutory speed goal is 10 by 5. But because of FCC speed tiers, our measures are at 10 by 6. And so there very well may be IT and business facilities and healthcare facilities that have that higher, even higher speeds. But in terms of the population and the residences there, they, according to our data, when we last collected it last fall, that percentage fell below, I believe you said, 20%.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Nelson.
So having speeds above the state goal would be sufficient, but you're saying the number of households with speeds below the state goal of 10 up and 6 down.
Correct. That's what this map shows. And statewide, as we indicate, and I'll show a little bit more about that near the end, we're at 61.57% across Minnesota that have access to broadband at the state statutory speed goal.
Thank you.
So, Mr. Hoffman, according to your map, then, and we're all kind of creatures of habit, each senator kind of looks at the area of the state they represent. On this map, yellow would be a lower rate, and as you move to the darker colors, they would have more coverage or more people under the state's goal.
Chair Sparks, that is exactly correct.
Okay, thank you.
So just another example, and again, hopefully you all saw the maps that I sent you for your own districts, but this is a county example of a map that shows, in this case, the type of broadband available. So fiber would be orangey. Cable is the darker pink, if you will, DSL and fixed wireless, et cetera. So at the county level, we have all those maps available on our website, as well as many more. So if you take a look at that or your staff takes a look at it and you have any questions, just don't hesitate to give me a call. I mentioned the survey and research we conduct and the residential and business survey that we do annually. I'd just like to share a couple highlights, and actually you're going to get the first view of the results of our 2012 residential survey that measures broadband adoption and use. So we're going to release this later in February, but I wanted to share the most recent update with you here today. So according to our latest survey results in 2012, Minnesotans are at a 78% rate of adoption in terms of subscribing to home broadband service. Importantly, in our two previous surveys, that number was 72%. So we've seen from our 2011 survey, our 2010 survey, to the 2012 survey, a 6% increase in subscriptions to home broadband service. That's a good trend, obviously, rather than staying stagnant. So I think that probably reflects a lot of good work in the nonprofit, the state, the public sector, the provider sector. Further, we look at why people who don't adopt. And the most significant reason that people give when asked why they do not subscribe to home broadband service is relevance. In other words, there's nothing online that I want to do or that I want to see, which is interesting. It is by far the largest reason, and that's consistent over time with our previous surveys. So that still is staying in place as the largest reason for folks not adopting home broadband service. Now here's in our survey, we try to delve a little deeper and look at different demographic groups. And again, these are the results of our 2012 survey that will be more fully released in February. But you can see a comparison between the statewide numbers on the far left and then a number of different segments that we looked at on the right-hand side of the screen. Obviously, there's some important and interesting information there, I think, as we move forward. And Chair Kelleher will talk about the work of the task force. But when you look at mobile use, which is referenced in each group by the far right number, so in the over 65 and older, for example, we see 14%. And then so forth in the other three, we see how that number in certain segments is higher than others. And we also see how rural residents, for example, have an adoption rate about 7% below the state average. And seniors have a much greater drop-off in terms of adoption when we looked at it. And that's consistent with our results in prior years as well. And so I know Dr. Geller will be up later and talk a little bit about his findings related to both, I believe, rural and mobile use. So he can delve a little bit deeper. But we will also be delving a little bit deeper as we release this later in February. We also like to look, and last year we released something right before Christmas about satisfaction, because that's always a big question. We occasionally see articles written about people not happy with their service, and we wanted to get a little bit of a flavor about how Minnesotans feel about their home broadband service. And when we looked at it, according to our results, for the most part, we had pretty high satisfaction rates across all those segments. Obviously, the one only one below 50% that we measured was in price, but you know, you could ask people how much they pay for apples at the store, and most would probably say they wish they were cheaper. So, but in terms of reliability and speeds and customer service, we were pleased to see that in Minnesota, those numbers are significantly higher than 50%. So that also is included in the kind of research that we do and then release to the state as well as all of Minnesota throughout the year. We also looked and do look annually at business adoption and use. And this is a little bit from our 2011 survey. We are in the process of conducting a survey right now that will be released later in the summer on business adoption and use of broadband. And I won't go into all these categories, and there's much more on our website. But you can see the kind of data we do gather and report on, segments, the different types of businesses that have and use broadband and subscribe, both by specific business type as well as employee levels. And we also look at, and it's on our website, the impact on revenue, businesses that subscribe to broadband versus those that don't in the same bucket of a business type. And so you can really see the impact of broadband on the business sector of the Minnesota economy. And now we're getting to wrap up here. I mentioned our state speed goal and the number 61.57% according to our last measurement. Here you can see, since we've been measuring availability at the state speed goal, where the trend has gone, and at what pace. It's about a little over a 5% increase since we started measuring this in April of 2011. And then these final two charts, I think, are interesting because there is a question that the task force deals with, as well as comes up all the time more and more, the impact of mobile and cellular broadband. This graph shows the availability across Minnesota at this wide variety of speed tiers, including mobile broadband. And if you look at the far right, the percent of households by speed tiers, you obviously see those numbers. And when you get to the state speed goal of 61.57 and below, in my next chart, you'll see those numbers stay static. But above that line, you'll see those numbers drop off. And I point that out because between the two, you'll be able to see the impact that mobile broadband is having on speed availability across Minnesota. So when you look at it there, you can see a drop off anywhere from 2% all the way up to 7%. And that's the impact already that we're seeing from mobile broadband and the continuing evolution of those technologies. So it's starting to make an impact, and we anticipate that it'll make even greater impact in the years ahead.
Senator Nelson.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think you might have got to the point that I've been thinking about since that map I asked you about last, where I just couldn't believe that Olmsted County is at 20%. But I'm reading the title, and it says that particular map is terrestrial non-mobile broadband, which probably explains my dismay at this figure. But what I'd like to see is this particular same map that includes all broadband service, whether it's terrestrial or non-mobile or mobile, and why break it out? Why is it important to know the difference between non-mobile and mobile?
Chair Sparks and Senator Nelson. In terms of the state speed goal of 10 by 5, mobile is not yet meeting that in terms of the combination of download and upload speeds. And so the impact on availability at the state speed goal is not felt yet by mobile broadband, although we anticipate that it will. But in our last measurement, it had not gotten there yet. So that's why that number and percentage would be where it is with no impact from mobile, because it's not hitting that speed goal yet.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, just to follow up then, I'm just curious about the speed goal, mm-hmm. as opposed to what exactly maybe businesses want. Or I guess this is residential
right.
Consumers want. Is it possible that they think that having, for some reason, mobile broadband is preferable to having maybe a higher speed at a non-mobile broadband? And why would the state be concerned about that?
Mr. Hoffman.
Chair Sparks, Senator Nelson. The consumer will out, right? And so some consumers might not want or need a 10 by 5 speed. But and this was before my time, so I would defer to Chair Kelleher or somebody from the Department of Commerce. The state legislature, signed by then-Governor Pawlenty, wanted to set a goal that was ambitious, recognizing that more and more economic activities and social activities were moving into an online arena, and that higher speeds were going to be necessary to be able to accomplish a lot of that, whether it's – and the task force is looking at all this, but everything from telehealth to medical records to online education, et cetera, even for the average citizen, is eventually moving in that direction. And so to have that higher speed option, whether they want it or not, to have that option would be important for Minnesota economically and socially going forward to be able to access and make use of the wide array of services that are moving in that direction. And we already see examples in the healthcare field where you need that kind of high speed to deal with x-rays or teleconferencing, for example, if you lived in a rural county and wanted to have a teleconference with a doctor in the Twin Cities or Mayo, where you would need that dynamic higher speed to be able to fully utilize that kind of opportunity.
Okay, thank you. Senator Bonnell.
Mr. Chair, and I guess just a follow-up to Senator Nelson's point, I guess it's hard to believe that Rochester doesn't have that speed, but that's another story. But the question that I was wanting to ask is about telephone service. I know many people are wrestling with, should they keep their landlines versus their cell phones and the connectivity around, you know, just counting on this mobile device 24/7. Do you look at that in terms of statistics? Do you see a trend towards that? Is that part of your initiative? And is that of import to the state of Minnesota?
Mr. Hoffman.
Chair Sparks, Senator Bonhoff, we look at the evolution of who's using a mobile device to access broadband or access the internet, get online. We don't and haven't looked at if people are getting rid of their landlines and using that as a sole communication device. Although, quite frankly, one of the things that we bring to the state, we have the flexibility because we do this annually to incorporate new questions. So the survey isn't static. So that's a very good idea, and we can work with you if you have specific questions you'd like us to ask in our 2013 survey and the Department of Commerce to perhaps delve into questions that we haven't. So we'd be happy to do that.
Mr. Chair, that would be great. I think people are at that point right now where they're deciding what makes sense from both a financial perspective but also a safety perspective. Can they just rely on a mobile device? What are the vulnerabilities of that reliance in the overall system? I know right now if you're in a place where there's lots of cell phone activity, then you can sometimes not get, you know, your service through. So things like that will be interesting going forward.
Senator Hur.
Yes, Mr. Hoffman, I just want to get clarification on the word broadband. That includes satellite as well, right, I assume?
Mr. Hoffman?
Chair Sparks, Senator Hur, we do not incorporate satellite into this because it is by its nature ubiquitous. So theoretically, everybody in Minnesota could get a satellite service. There are some areas that couldn't for natural topography reasons. But ours is focused on fixed platforms. And then we do look at mobile as well. So we do not include satellite in this data.
Thank you. Mr. Hoffman, thank you. I think this report is very helpful. Two questions. First of all, you know, just on a general basis, how do you think we're doing as a state? And then second of all, I think, if I'm correct, your funding is potentially going to run out in 2014. Is there going to be a possibility of doing some more? I don't want to steal any of the chair of the governor's task force on broadband, but for your actual organization, is there going to be some funding going forward to continue these efforts that you've done so far?
Chair Sparks, your first question. I'm sorry, could you repeat that? I was too focused on the second part.
Focus on the second part.
We'll come
back to that.
Oh, the second part. Well, I think that remains to be seen. We are operating under a federal grant. The NTIA and the FCC have made it clear that they want these programs to continue. Whether or not the federal government will put the pieces in place to continue funding is uncertain. But we, as an organization and as a program, are looking at a combination of federal, state, and private sector opportunities to keep this going. When you look at the fact that the FCC is going to be making financial determinations on the Connect America Fund based on data that's and mapping and availability information that needs to be collected at the state level, one would imagine that they will have to find a way to keep that information coming.
Okay. Thank you very much. Any other questions? Senator Schmidt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Mr. Hoffman. I'd like to draw your attention to these maps that you walked us through, the map of Minnesota and also zooming in on the map of Freeborn County. And I'm just kind of curious. I think this we have two different views here. One suggests that Freeborn County, you know, less than 20% of residents, households have access to 10x6 service. And now if we zoom in here on Freeborn and we're looking at, you know, what defines broadband here, you know, it's 768, you know, kilobits per second downstream, 200 kilobits per second upstream. And I'm just curious, is there any level of detail that maybe gives us a better picture of what the actual service is in Freeborn in this zoomed-in map? It's kind of a low threshold in my mind, and we don't really know what the true story is here. There's a big area in between these two maps that I think tells the true story of what's going on. And I think that's the kind of information that would be most useful for us as legislators, or most useful for us as we try to get a sense of what's available in our communities.
Mr. Hoffman?
Chair Sparks, Senator, on our website, we do have a variety of county-level maps, so there are more there are specific maps related to different speed tiers other than the basic broadband that you indicated. So there are enhancements and different views of what is available in the county. So that's there. But also, if something is not there, we have the ability to create it. So if you were to look at your own county or the map I sent of your Senate district and wanted some additional information on a map, we more than likely can get that done. So we have that flexibility working to do that with you or with the Department of Commerce, and we've done that numerous times in our history, created specialty maps. So we can do that.
Okay, so you have that data. We don't, Mr. Chair, Mr. Hoffman, you have that data. We don't have to extrapolate it by the service providers that are in that area. We can actually look at that threshold and get a better sense.
Mr. Hoffman?
Chair Sparks, Senator, yes, exactly.
Okay, thank you.
Good, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Hoffman. Any other questions of Mr. Hoffman? Thank you. Those are good questions. Thank you very much for your presentation.
Thank you for having me.
Next, we'd like to call up the chair of the Governor's Task Force on Broadband, and many of you will recognize her, a former Speaker of the House. Margaret Anderson Kelleher, welcome to the committee, and we look forward to hearing from you this afternoon as well.
Mr. Chairman, thank you so much. Thank you, members, for having us in. I represent a number of people in the task force, and they were delighted. We actually met over at the MnDOT building yesterday as the task force, and they were thrilled that we were getting to come before the Senate committee, so thank you so much. Actually, you should all know that the senator came over yesterday and gave us a little bit of an idea of where the committee might be interested, along with Chairman Johnson from the House, so that was a very good discussion as well. So I want to first thank some people. First of all, thank the governor for appointing a governor's broadband task force. We're actually the third governor's broadband task force. There were two under Governor Pawlenty, and this is Governor Dayton's broadband task force that he appointed. We think that's an important piece, and you probably, I'll get to this when I talk about why are we here and why is this important. It links back to those earlier task force. I want to thank Commissioner Rothman for his support of the task force work, along with Assistant Commissioner Dennis Ehlers, who I know is out ill today and can't be with us, but had wanted to be with us. And three special thank yous. Diane Wells from the Department of Commerce, who's sitting behind me, who has done a ton of work on behalf of the task force, is a phenomenal resource for us. Bill Hoffman from Connect Minnesota, who is also jointly staffed the task force. And formerly with the Minnesota High Tech Association, where I work today, Joanna Dornfeld, who is now over at the Department of Revenue. So those three really provided the staff-level support. I also want to say that Mr. John Fuller attended our June meeting. He's back. He's mentioned in the report. In our preparation for as we were going through policy ideas, we thought it was important to have experts in on policy, and Mr. Fuller came over, and a couple of folks from the House Research Department as well, to talk before the committee and answer our questions about policy formation. So, Mr. Chair, why are we here? And there's the sort of, you know, we're here because this is under a governor's order and there's state goals. But I want to go back just a little bit further to why the broadband task force exists at all. Why does it matter that the committee focuses on this issue during the 2013 session? It matters because just as highways and sewer and water lines and other infrastructure provided critical infrastructure and do provide critical infrastructure for business, education, and healthcare, as well as livability and connectivity to each other, we believe that high-speed access, broadband access, and Senator Herr, in our committee, in our task force, we actually define this broadly. So there's a little bit of a difference here. Mr. Hoffman's group is measuring the fixed asset. We actually say that we are technology neutral in the task force. We are concerned about all different ways to connect across the state of Minnesota, especially being able to hit this big goal. So we think it's important for commerce. We believe it's important for the growth of the state. We believe it's important for education, both at the youngest levels and higher education. And we know that it's important for healthcare. Senator Nelson, we saw this announcement today by the Mayo Clinic of a destination investment in the Rochester community. And what we know about that is we know that without high-speed access, that will never be fully realized across the state. And so this is a piece of why it's important. So we were established under executive order, and we have 15 members. We have been meeting monthly, and you probably want to see who is on the task force. This is our membership. We represent public, private, nonprofit across the state of Minnesota. This represents the work that we have produced, represents over 500 hours of volunteer hours alone of the task force. And you can add in addition to that a good percentage of staff work as well. Today in the audience, I know that Steve Lesader is here. He's over that way. Steve is a member of the task force. He represents labor on the task force through the Communication Workers of America. But I know that if we are live and streaming, many of our other task force members are watching us right now. So here are the goals that Mr. Hoffman referenced, as well as what the task force sets its work against. And so I will also say this. This work in the task force, Mr. Chairman, would not be possible without the work of Connect Minnesota doing the measurement across the state. And so their work has been vitally important to us being able to say, are we making progress or not on these goals? How fast is the progress? And then also, what is going to happen? Are we going to be able to meet the statewide goal by 2015, which is border-to-border broadband access for all Minnesotans? In the letter to the governor that prefaces this report that was produced in December, and I think you all have a copy of the report, I have to say that it was important to the task force to say that without further policy intervention, we will not meet that border-to-border goal. Now, could we meet the border-to-border goal with intervention? We believe that that could be met. We also believe it could be met more quickly with some partnership, and that is where we have focused our time. The task force has met 15 times since it was announced. We've met in both metro locations and across greater Minnesota. You'll see our list of cities and towns, and I think that's a pretty good range across the state of places that we've been, taking public testimony, talking about the importance of broadband. These are the types of topics that we have heard about. Telemedicine. We've been in a facility for disabled Minnesotans who are focused on that's focused on jobs and employment. Telework, data centers, dig once policies across the state, distance learning, a terrific presentation up in the Grand Rapids Deer River School District on how they are maximizing the use of high speed and technology. Tribal needs, city and county government needs. Citizens came to us individually. An entrepreneur from the Iron Range came to the meeting in Duluth, drove over, and talked about, he's actually a young man developing applications, the apps that are on your phone today, apps for iPads, and talked about his need for high-speed broadband. And we visited small companies and as well as heard from large companies like Unisys and DigiKey as we were out visiting across the state. We always, just so you're aware, we always invite the legislators. It was an election year this year, as you are all aware. Congratulations. So sometimes we didn't always have the most robust participation, but we did have legislators attend the meeting as well. So one of the things that we've done is to organize ourselves around subgroups to address things that we see and with professional input of the Department of Commerce and the past reports of the Broadband Task Force, how to organize ourselves around these areas. And so we've had subgroups about coordinating work across the government levels, things like dig once policies, best practices and incentives to be able to do broadband deployment and encourage adoption as well. And we also had a subgroup on what's the state of broadband that helped conduct some research with counties, as well as a group on broadband adoption, the impact of the FCC and the PUC decisions. And in fact, when Senator Bonhoff was asking about the telephone issue, Mr. Hoffman and I and Assistant Commissioner Ehlers went before the PUC, I believe in October, and had a good discussion about ways that the Public Utilities Commission and we may work together, but also issues that they face, and this issue of people dropping their landlines, which I know Dr. Geller has information for you today, was something that came up. We also realized during our 15 months that we needed to focus more on mobile and how mobile access is changing the landscape. And I think an important point on that, and one of the things that I would like to emphasize, is that we really saw there's great interest in mobile and there's great promise in mobile, but often mobile does not meet the speed goal. And that is important because there are certain things that are much more difficult to do when you don't have the basic level speed. I mean, I want you to think of the state goal almost at this point as a floor. It's certainly not a ceiling. Many businesses have much faster speeds than this and need much faster speeds to do their work. And one of the important parts to be thinking about is, and that we're going to be working on during the next year, is how mobile helps us meet these goals. The only caution I would give on adoption of mobile is that as you look at the small 3x5 screen, there are many things that we can do on our mobile devices that are terrific. One of the challenges is some of the needs that people have for doing things like doing online job application. I don't know about you, but senators, I cannot effectively fill out a form usually on that 3x5 screen very well typing. And so I think that it's fair to say that a lot of the applications for things like online job applications, which many employers are moving to, including the state of Minnesota, uses this sort of system, that would be difficult to do over a small mobile device. It's not to say that a tablet wouldn't suffice, but certainly the smaller device, it is difficult. We also have a meetings and location subcommittee as well. Now, in the 14 months that we have existed, we have produced three reports. The three different reports are all available both on the Connect Minnesota website as well as the Department of Commerce website. And first was a plan for how we were going to do our work and how we were going to assess where Minnesota is. We did a halfway through report that kind of gave us the guideposts for our December report. And the December report is the report you have in front of you. In the December report, we really wanted to focus on not just data and information, but also on recommendations for achieving our broadband goals. Our recommendations included in the report, and in some cases priced out for your possible introduction in legislation, are a number of things that we believe will make a difference and will often leverage private dollars as well. So we have a number of things that are tax credit or tax incentive related, providing a tax credit or grant to incent broadband providers to build in underserved and unserved areas of the state. We think this is an important leveraging tool. One of the biggest barriers to actually build out in underserved or unserved area is the cost of getting that service to people. And so being able to make that more cost competitive and be able to get the return on investment a little more in line with what a normal build out is important for providers to be willing to serve the area. We also believe it's important to extend the current sales tax exemption on telephone, cable, and satellite equipment to fiber and broadband equipment. I understand that there may be a provision in the governor's budget that moves in a different direction, and so that's something that folks may want to pay attention to. We also suggest that creating a program or mechanism to coordinate rural broadband installations with the federal and state program for hospitals, schools, libraries, and public safety is particularly important. And I can talk a little more about that if someone is interested in that, where we think we would like to focus. We also suggest that doing a formal dig once process to coordinate highway construction and broadband projects. We had good cooperation and participation from MnDOT in our process, and there are certainly terrific public servants, highway engineers, who are sharing this data and working together. But it is maybe a bit of a patchwork out there in terms of doing this. It's not a formal policy to share the information, and so we think it may be important to do that. In fact, we cite the state of Arizona, where last year they passed a coordinated dig once policy for rural highways. And one of the most interesting parts of that is they define information, the transportation as of information, in the purview of the Department of Transportation. We think that is something that should be looked at and considered here. Developing a Minnesota Fiber Collaboration Database. This has been done in California, and there's different model legislation out there for that. We also think that for students, awarding broadband scholarship dollars to low-income families can help. There are terrific programs by a couple of carriers out there already. Both Comcast and CenturyLink provide a very low-cost access program for high-speed broadband. I believe it's about $9.95 and between $9.95 and $15 a month. But even that can be a barrier for some families when you think about the yearly cost. And so being able to both promote and figure out how to overcome that barrier, because as many of you know with kids in school, that what happens today is teachers will say part of your homework tonight is to go home and watch this assignment online and come back tomorrow ready to go with your homework in hand. And so if you either don't have equipment access or access to the high-speed internet to be able to watch that video adequately, that will be a problem and a barrier. We also think in the short term, increasing funding to schools and libraries for computer access. This doesn't necessarily mean that more residents are getting that high-speed access, but we do think it's an important gap filler in the time between when we're not quite there yet. And then we believe the real establishment of a state government entity that handles high-speed broadband efforts that is focused. I'm just going to – can I go back by the other button, Bill? I just want
to –
right-click?
Yeah.
Let's go back to the previous. The important part with that is that we found certain things as we were the task force, the volunteers doing this task force work, lacking in availability. We have data from Connect Minnesota. That is fantastic. Dr. Geller provided a lot of information that we reference in the report and you're going to hear more about. One of the things that's very hard is that it was difficult for us to say this particular policy intervention is going to mean that 5% more Minnesotans will have access to broadband. And so having a modeling capability in this office of broadband would be important. That's a very specific type of training that someone would need to have to be able to model out. We know this exists in other parts of state government. It certainly exists in the energy area. It exists in the healthcare area, healthcare modeling. But we think having someone dedicated to do this in this area would be important as well. We also think it's important for going after federal dollars, especially in regard to connecting healthcare facilities across the state and educational facilities, that there will be federal dollars available, and having someone whose mission and job it is to be coordinating those efforts across state government would be critical as well. Let's see. I'm just going to take a pause here and see if I wanted to show you a couple other things that we produced when we went out around the state, and certainly we could pass these around. We produced something that we really decided was a resource county by county that would provide, and I'm just going to grab one, and then the page can grab the rest, and certainly are welcome to pass these around. Keep one if you really like it. I don't know if we hit the counties right here today, but these are some of the counties that we went to. It lists all the providers. It also gives the rates at the time that we published the document for residents to be able to see. It gave the mobile providers as well in this document, the cable and digital providers too, internet providers, and then the home phone providers as well as telecommunication services that were available. One of the things the task force found is that access is really important, having the access to the service, but the other part that is a driver in this is adoption. And so one of the issues that these sorts of resources try to get at is helping people know how to connect, where to connect, who they have a choice to be able to call and connect with to get service. Mr. Chairman, I'm going to stop talking, and I'm sure there are probably questions about the task force's work.
Thank you. Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chairwoman Kelleher, thank you very much for the report. And I think you're exactly right as far as the importance of high-speed internet connection, and whether it be telemed or MOOCs or commerce, it's absolutely needed. And I even think I recall Governor Plenty's discussion about this 10 years ago when I was in the House. So my question is, in 10 years, technology has changed an immense amount. And my question is the goal that we set 10 years ago, is it relevant for today? I don't know if the speed, in my own mind, I'm a little wondering about, I'm still trying to come to grips with this 20% Olmsted County number. I know that just can't be accurate. But what I'm wondering is, really, is our goal relevant for today? Because a lot has changed in 10 years. And I'd like some your thoughts on that. Not just necessarily speed, but also the way that we access the internet, because mm-hmm. that has certainly changed a lot as well. And so if you can kind of speak to the mobile piece versus the non-mobile aspect, and you mentioned also the dig once process. Are we always going to be digging lines to get broadband? I'm thinking things may change, and where most of our internet service might not come through a line in the ground. So mm-hmm. can you kind of address the relevancy of our goal, our 10-year-old goal?
I'll try to do that. Mr. Chairman and Senator Nelson, this is often a source of debate. And in the start of the task force, this is something that it is easy to spend a lot of time on, which is debating the goal, right? But in some ways, one of the things that the task force felt its job was to do after a good, healthy debate after a couple of meetings was that this is the goal in state statute. And so we need to measure against that goal. We really have no choice but to measure against the goal. Now, it's certainly up to all of you if you would think there would be a change needed to that goal. What I will say, when Mr. Hoffman had the slide up of the lower speeds and that very low speed that he was talking to Senator Schmidt about, there are many people in the task force that feel we should not even say that's high speed or broadband. So if we had a contention in the task force, I think it would be that that speed is way too low to even be considered high speed anymore in terms of what else is available out there. We didn't spend time wrestling with the question of whether the speed should be changed. We did talk a little bit about the need for measuring satisfaction. You saw that Mr. Hoffman with Connect Minnesota went down that route because we think there's a balance here. There's a balance between are people happy doing what they're doing online today versus a set in statute speed goal. But I will tell you this. My niece, who lives close to Senator Coonan's district, has two little girls. They're delightful. They are Riley and Mallory, and they're so cute. And her grandparents, who live near Mankato, just love to get pictures of them, my brother and sister-in-law. But it's okay when you're sending the pictures out. But if you're trying to download those pictures on the service that they have, wow, that can take all night long to download those pictures. So I guess that's a question about, you know, what can you do what you need to do on the speeds that are defined here. One area of cleanup may be this area where Connect Minnesota is measuring at 6, and in the state statute we say 5. It would be great if you guys wrestled with that question because it makes it a little messy for the measurement purposes in terms of going forward. Now, let's see. You ask about mobile. We see this as a growing area of interest, and I know that Dr. Geller is going to present some really important information on digital divide and how the digital divide disappears a bit with mobile access. But I do think that we need to still be concerned about, here's what the providers, I think, would tell you. Even if it's a mobile provider, somewhere there is a wire in the ground to a tower today, for the most part. And so when you ask about dig once and you ask about service availability, even to get to that tower, you need to dig in the ground and get some sort of connection out to the tower for the tower to be able to operate. Now, could we see a day when we're all satellite? Maybe, but it's not going to be by 2015. And so by the goals that are in the state statute, which we are measuring ourselves against, we can't quite get there by then. So I think that's, you know, there's a couple different ways to look at that. The other thing about satellite, and we should just say this, is that in certain topography in the state, satellite is less than adequate. We had folks when we were at the Deer River hearing who told us, you know, it's great until it snows. It's terrific until the wind blows. And then it becomes an issue. And so if you're utilizing it for things that you don't need a particular fixed time to get connected, probably okay. The problem is if you're relying on it for telework, if you're relying it on a healthcare appointment, if you need to do your online class, it's going to be less than adequate then. in many cases if there's a issue with weather. Did that get all those questions, Mr. Chairman and Senator Nelson?
Yes, you did a great job. It looks like we still might have room for some improvement, but thank you. You did answer.
Thank you very much. Madam Chair, obviously I want to thank you and the task force for all the hard work that you've put in, and I know that we're going to be reviewing the summary of recommendations and obviously working with you and the other members, see if there's some things that we can bring forward. I know you've already had the collaboration you talked about with Connect Minnesota and with Dr. Gelleher. Do you know under the governor's budget proposal, he recommended funding for that broadband development office? Would you envision then that your task force would also now work closely with them? I mean, obviously, he's made a real commitment to this, but just how do you see that kind of fitting in with your role as the chair of the task force?
So, Mr. Chairman, thank you for that question. We believe that it would be a very close relationship working with the Office of Broadband Development fully envisioned. The other part of it is our task force has talked about and debated a little bit about the structure for future task force. As I mentioned, we're the third governor's task force. It means the governor appoints, and obviously, I am going to say the governor did a very good job here. We have a good task force. It balances out interests. But having been the former Speaker of the House, I also know to move policy forward, it's important to have the input of the legislature as well. And so, one thing that could be envisioned as well with this newly envisioned office or establishment of office is some more statutory designation of a task force commission structure where there would be input by the legislature as well as the governor, so that there's some accountability mechanisms for all of you for the work that a commissioner task force does, as well as thinking about the policy development side of things.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Yeah.
Senator Schmidt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Madam Speaker, I have a quick question for you. And sorry I stepped out of the room, so if I missed this, I apologize. But if you could just address what's happening in rural Minnesota in particular with respect to meeting the state's goals for broadband speed, both upload and download, and just give us a little picture on what's happening in rural Minnesota. I think we've seen, a couple of different perspectives here today. I think for this committee in particular, it's good for us to focus in on what is happening out in rural Minnesota. And again, I apologize if I missed you addressing this while I was gone.
That's a good question. Chair Anderson Kelleher.
Mr. Chair and Senator Schmidt, thank you for the question. The maps provided and on the Connect Minnesota website will give you a very visual picture of this. But what I can say is that for the most part, rural Minnesota does lag behind the 7-county metro area in terms of access. In some cases, not nearly as far behind as some might think, because in places where there are regional centers, where there are major economic drivers, there's actually more availability and the speeds are going up, and so that's quite good. I think the challenge in rural Minnesota as well are issues of being able to get to that last mile, that last farm, the community where it's much smaller, and how to properly address that. So it can be a barrier for a number of people. We also heard from people, Mr. Chair and Senator Schmidt, along the way, who are running their businesses in small towns across Minnesota, and how important this is. I know Dr. Geller is going to talk about this a little more in terms of adoption in rural Minnesota and across rural Minnesota. One of the things that I think is important for us to continue to talk about are the uses and the importance for business. That when a business has a high-speed internet connection and a website, they do significantly better with their sales. And that doesn't mean they have to be selling online necessarily. But I think we've all had this experience. 11 o'clock at night, you're trying to figure out your next day's activities, and you want to know, In my retirement from the legislature, I know almost every quilt shop in the state, and I often look for where the quilt shops are at, and much to my husband's absolute, you know, horror that I'm looking for the quilt shops and trying to figure out when they're open. And so those that have a website and have that high-speed connection are doing much better than the ones that aren't. And it is a simple fact. It's that people know where to find you and how to find you. So it's a real advantage in rural Minnesota to be able to connect and be connected, as well as be living where you want to live and do what you want to do. So it's an important piece. But I know Dr. Geller is going to present great stuff to you today.
Thank you very much. Members, any other questions? Thank you. That was a very wonderful presentation.
Mr. Chair and members, we are at your ready and happy to help in any way in moving things forward. And I know that the final slide has my work email on it and my phone number. I'm happy to be a resource to any of you, and I'm sure that the members of the task force are as well. So thanks so much.
Thank you. Next, we'll call up Dr. Gelleher, an old friend from the University of Minnesota Crookston. Welcome to the committee. We look forward to hearing from you this afternoon as well.
Oh,
old maybe wasn't
Thank
the right
you,
word. Not
Mr.
an old
Chair.
Friend, a friend.
Yeah, right. pleasure to be here. Bill, I may need a little bit of technical assistance, but maybe not. Let's see if we can just go to open. And find it. Take them off of it. Eventually. Technology is a wonderful thing. Here we go. Almost there. Okay. My apologies, Mr. Chair, committee members, senators. My name is Jack Geller. I'm with the University of Minnesota Crookston. And it really is a pleasure to be here. I think I've been invited to come here because I've been, in some fashion or another, measuring broadband deployment, adoption, and utilization throughout Minnesota, and specifically in rural Minnesota, since 1999. So as long as there's been broadband in Minnesota. So what I'd like to do is just take a minute and give a quick primer and then go into some of the details. Is it forward, left, or right? Left. Okay. So you've heard several times today already about adoption. So let's start from the beginning. You know, what exactly is adoption? And adoption in broadband is no different than people adopting microwaves in their kitchens or any technology. Including cell phones or cars in the garage. A new technology comes out, and there's always a group of innovators, risk takers, who are the earliest adopters. And then the rest of us kind of sit on the sideline over time, waiting to see whether or not there's sufficient benefit for us to adopt. And as you can see, over time, the technology takes hold and it takes off. And then it eventually kind of levels out. It's important to note that when I talk about 100% there, I'm not talking about 100% of the population. Rather, I'm talking about 100% of the people who will eventually adopt the technology. Understand that there are still people who still don't have microwaves in their kitchens, cars in their garage, and a few people who don't even have electricity in their homes. People choose to adopt or not adopt technology for a wide variety of reasons. So the goal when we talk about adoption is not adopting, you know, 100% of the population, because there is no technology that 100% of the population. Usually when I talk about this, I pull out a cell phone and say, okay, everybody has one, right? And I'm sure in this room the answer is yes. But I can assure you in almost every other room, there's always a few who say no. It's not because they don't know what it is. It's not because they don't understand the benefits of it. It's not because it's too expensive. But for a variety of reasons, people choose not to adopt. So when we talk about adoption, again, this is actually that same S-shaped curve, but it's kind of normalized. And you could see that the first 2.5% of people who adopt any kind of technology are thought of as innovators and then early adopters. And then when you get to the early majority, that's where things take off. And eventually, things wind down and level off. And these are people who are the last to adopt technology. And in some ways, depending upon the technology we're talking about, we're all innovators and we're all laggards. It just depends upon which technology. And so that's just the nature of the beast. So where are we? This is where we are right now in Minnesota. And I was so tempted to put 78% on this slide because I knew that Connect Minnesota came out with their new numbers and it was actually 78%, but they hadn't released it yet, so I kind of kept my powder dry. But now that the bloggers are here, it's going out. You're not going to be able to keep it, you know. It's the cat is out of the bag. But it is basically 78%. So if you're thinking about it in terms of 4 out of every 5 Minnesota homes have adopted this technology, the question becomes, where on the curve are we? You know, how much further do we go? What does it take to get to that last 80% or so, or that last 20%? And that has a lot of implications in terms of policy and in terms of program. How deep do you want to go? How much resource do you want to invest to grab that last marginal 22%? And that's a fair question. I don't have an answer, but I think that those are the kind of questions you need to look at. So the first issue is, are we approaching the end of the adoption curve when it comes to broadband? And in my mind, the answer is, yeah, probably. We're not there yet. We'll continue to see growth. But I think we're getting closer. I mean, now that we say 4 out of every 5 homes have it, you know, where do we go from here? Yet at the same time, we do know from previous work that intervention does work. There are things you can do in communities that are going to move this needle north. But understand, and I didn't have full access to Mr. Hoffman's slides, but elderly people are a big part of those non-adopters, people who are 65 and over. And understand that even amongst that group that have the lowest adoption rate, we're continuing to see growth in adoption, even within that group, for a variety of reasons. But one of the biggest ones is what I call organic growth. And the best way to kind of describe organic growth is that every single day, there's a 64-year-old who has good digital skills who has a birthday. And all of a sudden, he or she flops into the 65 and over category and collectively increases the adoption rate of that group. And so in some ways, if you do nothing, you're still going to see growth. Of course, the other side of it is every day there's an 89, 90, 95-year-old non-adopter who isn't with us anymore. And that's another way of raising, you know, statistically, the adoption curve. So understand that there are things that you can do that are going to move that needle, and then there are things that you don't need to do at all and the needle will just move by itself. So my perspective on this, for what it's worth, is we really ought to invest a lot more time and energy and thought in helping Minnesotans maximize the broadband they've already adopted and help them, both individuals and businesses, maximize that broadband to its greatest utility, as opposed to, you know, obsessing on that last 22%. The second issue is, well, is that equally true for business, what I said about residences? The answer is no. It's not equally true for business. Rural businesses are lagging behind. But it's important to understand they're not lagging behind in adoption. Mr. Hoffman's data shows that the adoption rate of rural businesses and non-rural businesses are not very different. It's the utilization of it. And so rural businesses generally don't have websites to the same extent that urban businesses. They may be using their broadband for email or other things, but they're not maximizing that utilization. And I think the other thing is, when we talk about utilization amongst businesses, it's really important to understand we generally drift towards people can sell more, they can advertise more with broadband, they can increase their sales. It's all true. But ask businesses the real advantage of broadband, and they will tell you it has little to do with that. It has everything to do with increasing the productivity. Things that used to take 20 and 25 minutes now with a broadband connection to get that information and move on take 5 minutes. Multiply that transaction hundreds of times every week, and you have gratefully increased the productivity of the businesses. And in a world where time is money, there's great advantage to broadband. So yes, it'll increase sales and it'll increase your market share, and you can now sell globally, and all that's true. But don't shortchange the nuts and bolts of just being a more productive business of doing whatever you do because you have these tools now. And here's just some things that I kind of threw in there, just trying to explain that rural businesses really are lagging behind, and I'm not sure if we can get them caught up without some kind of meaningful intervention. What was really interesting is while about 72% of all businesses have a website and 58% of all rural businesses have a website, if you look at just those communities that are declining in rural Minnesota demographically and economically, in those communities, only 30% of the businesses have a website. So there's kind of an interesting connection there. The third issue that has been talked about quite a bit is about mobile internet. And I think that I have a little bit different take than the previous presenters. I'm more positive about it, especially as it relates to rural areas. But I don't think, and for many years, we've kind of ignored this. Even though every day we're getting emails, you know, that says sent from my iPad, from my iPhone. You have all the evidence that all this stuff is going on right in front of you. And yet, in many ways, when we measure things, we don't measure mobile. I don't think we can afford to ignore this part of the internet landscape anymore. And I do believe that, in all fairness, both the task force and Connect Minnesota have been paying an enormous amount of attention now to this particular piece of technology, because I think we all understand that we can't ignore it anymore. Senator Bonhoff talked a little bit about, or asked a little bit about, people who are dropping their landlines big time. Matter of fact, the Center for Health Statistics just reported that 35.8% of all American households are completely wireless now, more than a third. It was 20% in 2008. Now it's more than a third. And the needle is continuing to move in that fashion. If you're of my age or anywhere around my age and you have kids who have established their own homes now, you know they don't have a landline. And as legislators, you come to the Capitol and establish a residence. Do you have a landline here in St. Paul? No, you don't. So we know where that's going. And I have all the confidence in our telephone providers to move their business models, appropriately to adjust to it, because they've knew it before any of the rest of us knew it. So this is where adoption is on mobile internet, and this is really important. Generally, when we think about internet, we think about home broadband internet and then mobile internet. But truth, we may not be able to think about it much that way anymore. For example, Verizon now has a product that's out there that they're selling throughout Minnesota and throughout the country called Home Fusion. It's a 4G LTE network. You have an antenna on your home, and you hook it up to your home computer. Instead of having cable, instead of having DSL, you have a 4G network coming into your home. Why not? We don't really care about the technology. You know, we're technology neutral. We're just interested in the speed and the ability. But there are some other unique things about mobile broadband that you need to pay attention to. And that is this. Currently, if you look at across the nation, and this is data from the Pew Center, looking at those who adopt broadband at home, terrestrial-based, clearly, people of color appear to be on the wrong side of the digital divide, okay? And they're adopting at a considerably lower rate than the rest of us. But here's what it looks like when you look at the adoption of mobile internet. In fact, Latinos and African Americans are actually adopting this technology at a slightly higher rate than white Americans. And so are they really on the wrong side of the digital divide or not? I guess it depends upon how you set your definitions for what exactly is broadband. I think also when you think about young people or people who are economically challenged, they may have some choices to make economically in their life. You know, if you're like me, you're overconnected already. You have a home broadband network. You have cellular. You probably have an iPad that has a 4G network to it. You know, you're way too connected already. But if you only had one, if you economically, like maybe your kids, they're starting out their careers, they can only really have one connection. Which one are you going to pick? Chances are it's this one. And so I think that we have to understand that it's very important. And while I completely agree with Task Force Chairwoman Kelleher about I would never want to fill out an employment application on a 3.5 screen or maybe not even on a tablet. But like I said, the technology is there. It's being sold to bring an LTE platform, you know, wireless connection into your home computer. If, in fact, you don't really, if you happen to live in an area where you don't have access to DSL cable or fiber or some other terrestrial base. So if for no other reason, when we think about filling in those holes right now in parts of rural Minnesota, this is important. This is true for Minnesota as well. This is Connect Minnesota's data in terms of broadband, in terms of statewide rates, rates on African Americans, rates for Latinos, and here's what it looks like for mobile. It's really, in some ways, a great equalizer, if you want to think of it that way. So the big question that people have asked is it fast enough? Can we actually deal with 10-5, 10 down, 5 up? Does it meet our standards? The answer is yes and no. From a technology standpoint, the answer is yes. Absolutely, yes. I could tell you, I have a 4G enabled phone here, and I go all over rural Minnesota, and I'm constantly doing speed tests. And the answer is, there are times when I hit speeds that blow terrestrial base out of the water. I've gotten, you know, 20 and 10, 20 down, 10 up on a 4G network, okay? But not everywhere. It's spotty. And so, yes in those places where the answer is yes, but no in those places where the answer is no. But it's going to diffuse out. And I think we all know that over time, the answer will be a more consistent yes. But for me, the answer is yes, just not consistently. In the labs, in metro areas, the data is clearly showing that 10 down, 5 up is easy to hit on an LTE network, but not everywhere. And so, again, rural places are disadvantaged. And this is the real point that I want to make. And I think it's important to recognize, and everybody and you know, the chairwoman said it so nicely, you know, we put in statute these goals. And we put these goals in 3 years ago, in 2010. You put them in. Legislators wrote it into statute. You want to be one of the top five states in penetration and speed. And I can tell you, the moment you put it in, we started falling behind. And as a state, our ranking has been going down and down and down. The Broadband Task Force recognized that in its recent report in December 11. Chairwoman wrote a very kind letter as an introduction, maybe too kind. You know, I think we really need to do stuff, because the reality is that just passing a resolution to, you know, passing a statute to set goals without setting strategies, without doing anything, just setting goals, what does that do? You know, I mean, it's kind of a proclamation, which is good. It sets a goal. It gives us a vision. But if it isn't backed up with programs and implementing activities to reach it, I'm not sure what one expected just by setting a goal. I do not have, and I'll be clear, any recommendations as to what they, you know, what the legislature should do. I don't really think of it as my role to say, here's what the legislature should do. But I do think that the task force laid out a fairly clear set of recommendations. I think they're focused on building public and private partnerships between the state of Minnesota and our providers is a very smart way to go. And I think if there's just a message, it's a simple one. It's time to act. You know, if we really want to be in this top five states, if we really want to, you know, aspire to be that state that we appear to aspire to be in statute, then we need to do something. And I think the governor, as you said, Mr. Chairman, you know, laying out the development and establishment of a broadband development office is a great first step. I don't know what that broadband development office will do or be tasked with, but I think there's an opportunity here to do something really great. And so I guess that's my message more than anything else. It's just time to act. And that's all I have. Thank you. I appreciate your attention.
Thank you very much for your presentation. I think there's some very useful information, certainly for the rural members, but I think we're all in the same boat. Do members have any questions of Dr. Geller?
If not, thank you very much. I think all three presentations were very beneficial. Senator Schmidt, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Really enjoyed your presentation, Dr. Geller. Just a quick question. I'm wondering if you could maybe paint us a picture of the future and demand for applications for broadband services that we might not see yet. A lot is changing. And if you look, if you turn the clock back 10 years, I don't know if, how many of us in this room could imagine what reality is today. As you look down the road, when you have more and more attention to telemedicine or other applications, video, chatting, instead of viewing your grandkids' pictures online, you're actually seeing videos from them and you're exchanging, video content. I'm just curious if you could give us a sense of what kind of need we're going to be facing for, download and upload speeds maybe in 10 years from now. I know it's a tough question, but can you show us that future maybe a little bit?
Sure, Chairman Geller. Sparks. Senator Schmidt. I'm no futurist. I'm not going to pretend to be, but I feel very comfortable in saying whatever speeds you think we may need in the future, we're going to need more. Everything is going to come into our home, our business, our premise in one big pipe, because we're demanding it. We think about pictures, but many of us are getting high definition videos coming in to our homes right now by our providers through a rather big pipe. When you think about business applications, it's all going to be one big pipe. It's almost, I don't want to say it's kind of an insatiable thirst, because I do believe that there are limits to it. But it's going to be far bigger. I know the Blandin Foundation probably a year or two ago started talking about a gig, coming into the home. And to be honest, we all had a hard time thinking about that. What would you do with that much bandwidth? And now there are multiple communities. I was just down not too long ago in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Not exactly, a high-tech capital of the world. They're calling themselves Gig City now because they're offering a gig, And I think that what you're finding is more and more industries are doing things digitally that have never been done before. When you think about it, it doesn't have to be high-tech industries. In the smallest rural town, can you imagine a real estate office that doesn't have an online presence? It's a rather mundane industry. There's nothing terribly high-tech. And yet, you can't have a real estate business anymore without having a killer website with pictures, virtual tours, all this stuff. So we tend to kind of try to drift our imagination to high-tech businesses in healthcare and in a variety of ways. But really, every business from the most mundane to the most sophisticated is going to use that big digital pipe that'll be coming in. So the truth is, it can't be big enough.
Senator Bonham.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It is really interesting, and I had asked the question that you mentioned earlier about the telephone, but TV is another interesting thing to think about. We've been playing around with, Apple TV we use, and my son has a Roku, which is a similar kind of thing, where all of a sudden you can download anything and have it show up on your TV, and as you think about the implications of that, and that's very inexpensive, Apple TV is $99 to be able to do something like that. But so then it just makes you wonder where all that's going to go and how much consumers get to dictate what comes at them and how much control that gives consumers.
Chairman Sparks, Senator Bonhoeff, I think you're absolutely right. And the thing that you have to think about in terms of consumer demand, so it's not very, it's rather inexpensive, and everybody wants it. The only real question is, Do you want to wait an hour for that movie to download onto your TV? Because the size of the pipe is going to determine whether you're going to select that movie and then go out to eat and come back before, you know, it's there, or whether it's there in, you know, 2 to 3 minutes.
Thank you. Senator Schmidt.
One last question. Thank you, Mr. Chair, Dr. Geller. I guess you kind of alluded to this in your answer to my previous question, but could you, you know, I think we have a sense of what wireless is, but could you talk about everything that, not everything, but a little bit of the infrastructure that's involved with getting us to wireless and getting wireless out to rural Minnesota? It, in my understanding, it doesn't just happen. There's significant investments that are needed to do that.
Yeah.
Dr. Geller?
Chairman Sparks, Senator Schmidt, yes. And I'm not a technologist, and I don't get a paycheck from the wireless industry. So I'm sure that there are people in this room who know far more about it. But the reality is most, you have to understand that most of the wireless network is not wireless at all. Okay? What we're really talking about when we say wireless is the signal between your device and that tower. At the bottom of the tower, there's all kinds of fiber, you know, everything else. You know, and so that's what we're talking about. And so when we talk about wireless, most of wireless is not wireless. It's what we think of on the terrestrial side as the last mile, you know, from your house to that big pipe, from your iPad or iPhone to that tower. But even with that, you're right. There's significant investment. And again, it all depends. There are wireless connections, and I can download all over the state wirelessly on what I would generally call as mobile internet. A lot of it would not today meet the speeds that we're talking about, though. Those places that are 4G enabled, those LTE platforms, and, you know, we have it here in the Twin Cities, in Duluth and Rochester, Mankato, St. Cloud. In our border communities, very good wireless connections. But in a lot of the rest of rural Minnesota, where I spend some time and Senator Aiken spends some time, we're still on a 3G network, which is okay, but it's not really going to be, you know, sufficient, and it's not going to replace the terrestrial, you know, platforms and infrastructure that's out there now. But as it starts moving out, I think it'll be a bigger deal. But you got to remember, it won't solve all of our issues. There are, you know, every day you read in the paper about these Social Security numbers were compromised, these credit card numbers were compromised. Security is a very big deal in the digital world. There's no bank that's going to, you know, deal with anything but a very secure terrestrial presence. For residential purposes and for a lot of how many times you go to a street fair and you buy something, you give them their credit card, and you see the little cube that's right on top of their cell phone, and they're swiping your credit card wirelessly. Not the safest thing in the world, but the technology is there. And so it will take a significant amount of, to get back to your question, Senator, investment. But everything I see is, you know, is that the wireless providers are continuing to roll out and make those investments. All you can think of is if you had some partnerships with them, these public-private partnerships, both on the wireless side, the terrestrial side, can move things further faster.
Senator Hur.
Yes, Dr. Geller, since you mentioned that since 2010 when we make into a statute, our rank is declining or increased and going lower to number 15 or more. How's that compared to other states that's ahead of us? Or, you know, and what have they done better, or are they falling behind too?
Dr. Geller?
Senator Sparks, Senator Hur. I'm a little bit out of my expertise zone, so, you know, but I think that when I just look at other states that, let's say, at one time were behind us and now appear to be ahead of us, even other rural states like Vermont, you know, they're putting policies in place and not just setting goals. And they're actually appropriating dollars and, you know, establishing programs. The effectiveness of these activities, I have not evaluated, so I really can't speak to it. But other states are doing lots of different things. Sometimes because they want to get ahead of the curve. Sometimes I think because they're just fearful of falling behind the curve. So I'm not sure if it's actually the best policy. And I think, you know, Mr. Hoffman represents an organization that works in multiple states and maybe, you know, a little bit more expertise or have a little bit more expertise in this area. I'm not sure if there's a singular recipe of here's how you move up in rank, but I can tell you that doing nothing is not one of those recipes.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Doctor. I want to thank all of our presenters, and I also want to thank the members of the committee. You guys have been very engaged and asked a lot of good questions, and I think that, Doctor, you hit it right on the head. I think that this committee will be spending some more time during this session wrestling with these issues. So just a reminder to members this evening, the Agri-Growth Council, the Minnesota Milk Producers, and the Cooperative Network are having a legislative reception from 5 to 8 at 317 on Rice Park. I know they'd love to see members of this committee there. And I think on your way out, members, if you want, the milk providers have a few treats there if you want to grab something. But again, thank you very much, folks. I think Monday we're going to take up a couple confirmations and a drainage bill of mine. So with that, thanks you very much, and the meeting's adjourned.